moving on to the Shear, and another kind of sponsorship that I just want to get onto now, is that I'm very excited that the Shear today, which I think we're going to have a very interesting Shear today, Be'ezat Hashem, the Shear has been sponsored anonymously in memory of Bobby Hill. Bobby Hill's name is Binyamin Ben Beryl Leib, and the sponsorship is very, very gratefully received. Thank you for that. The wording on the sponsorship is that Bobby was an excellent educator and will be missed by the many people who he taught and inspired. All of that's true, but I want to add on my own personal comment to this as well. Many of you on this Zoom today will have known Bobby, especially those people in England. I assume that the sponsorship came from an English person, an English family, but not necessarily, because he was known beyond England as well. But I was very close to Bobby, and I want to really reiterate what an unbelievable educator, individual person Bobby was. I became close to him and his family about 30 years ago, my wife even longer, probably 35 years ago, when he was involved in running Jewish youth study groups in England. Bobby was an incredible person. He was a Talmud Chacham of immense proportion, an educator and pedagogue who could really connect with people in a way that I haven't seen really almost anywhere else. But he was also an incredibly humble man. He wouldn't go with titles. He wouldn't call himself rabbi, even though others wanted to. He just called himself Bobby. And he educated thousands upon thousands of people. On a personal level, let me just tell you how immensely he impacted my life, and through that your life. It was as follows. As a teacher, as a someone who teaches others, you pick up a lot of skills in different places. Some of them are content skills. And Baruch Hashem, I've been very fortunate over the last 30-odd years to more, 40 years, to get input from many, many different Rabbanim, Rosh Yeshiva, special close people like Rabbi Kimchi, who you hear from after this year. Very, very, very grateful to them. But one thing that I learned from Bobby, that more than from anybody else, was structure. Meaning, if I bring anything to the table in this world of Jewish education, it's not because I'm a Talmud Chacham, it's not because I have any Chidushim, it's not because I say anything more deep or erudite than any number of other people. If there's anything I bring to the table, I think it's the structure. And I think people appreciate that they like the way that things are set out, and they connect with that. That, in my terms, almost entirely comes from Bobby. Because I sat in shiur after shiur after shiur of Bobby's Torah on different subjects and imbibed his ability to structure and present, and therefore, in a sense, what I really am able to give you is, to a very large degree, coming straight from him. So I thank whoever the sponsor is for the sponsorship. The Shir should be an aliyah for his very, very precious neshama. Again, Binyamin Ben Beryl Leib, very excited to be in the Shir in his memory. Having said all of that, and with apologies for the introductions and lengthy ones, let's get into the Shir. Because today is going to be a very eclectic Shir. Not only are we going to hear from the classic sources of the Gemara and Rishonim and Shulchan Aruch, etc., we're going to hear from other unusual places, such as Gluckel of Hamlin, Shai Agnon, and even a quote from the New Testament, which, in case you think that's a little bit racy, don't worry, it's a quote from the New Testament, actually from the Gemara, that quotes the New Testament. We'll see what that is when we get there in just a few minutes. The topic I want to deal with today is inheritance. We've never talked about that before. Specifically the issue of the inheritance of daughters. We will see coming up very soon in Parshat HaShavua is the whole story of the Benot Tzlofchad and the inheritance of the Benot Tzlofchad, which we're going to start with right now. The issue of inheritance is very fraught, because many people amass a certain number of assets during their life, and one of the things that we want to do in life is have the presence of mind to know that those assets, what we gather during our life in terms of the physical wealth, obviously there's an enormous amount more than that, but will go to the people that we want it to go to. And if we get that wrong, it can cause decades, if not generations, of anger, resentment, unhappiness, machlokas. There's nothing that people like fighting over more than money. Families who are apparently perfectly good at getting on with each other when it comes to dividing up money are spectacularly bad. And therefore, let's have a look at inheritance, see what the Torah says, and more interestingly for our purposes, see how the modern day poskim take the Torah system and adapt it in ways that perhaps had not been envisaged at the start. We'll see how that we get on with that as we go through. It's going to be a shiur in two parts. Today we're going to lay the foundations, and next week what I want to do is present to you the different modern day options of how halachic wills work. A person should always have, if they have any money, if they don't have any money, they don't have any worries. And therefore, that's all great. But if they do have any money or assets, they should always, in addition to having a will, if they have a will, have a halachic will to make sure that what they want to do actually works halachically. And next week we'll look at the different structures as to how to do that. But this week, what I want to do is lay the foundation. Let me share the sheet. And...
Rabbi?
Yes, did I download the wrong thing?
Yes.
Okay. Well,
last week's.
Well, let's fix that immediately. Let me see if, in case you thought you were caught in Groundhog Day. My apologies that I did that. I have now downloaded this week's, and I hope that works. Is that coming up as this week's? I did give the right one? Oh, okay. Well, whatever. Now you've got it twice. The worst case scenario is you've got it twice. So, hopefully what you got on the download is 170, is that correct? Sheet 170 halakhic wills? Yes, good. Okay, so hopefully you've got everything you need and we can get on with it. I will share it on the screen anyway because we need to have a look at that straight away. Okay, fine. Without any further ado, let's get on with this let me show you what I'd like to present to you today. Okay, fine. Halachic wills. Let's look at the Torah source, which is the start of everything, which is the Banot Slavkat. I'm sure that everybody is familiar with the story. Let's quickly look at the first four or five lines, giving the lead-in, and then focus on the halachic angle. This is in a few weeks in Bamidbar Perich Hamzayin. Vatikravna Banot Slavkat. Ben Chefer, Ben Gila, Ben Mache, Ben Menashe. The whole genealogy of the Banot Slavkat, they come to Moshe, these five girls, the Mishpachat Menashe, okay, then Yosef, all the way down from Yosef. These are the girls, Machla, Noah, Chagla, Chogla, Milka, and Tirza. Fine. The Tamod Lifnei Moshe, Velifnei Elazar Kohen, they stand before Moshe, Velifnei Anisim, Bechol Eida, Petach Oel Moed Limor, and they say, Avinu Meit Bamidbar. Very strange exactly what's going on here. Our father died in the desert. Now, we haven't got to Korach yet, but we will in a week or two. They didn't die with the Korach crowd. He died of his own sin. And the rabbis here speculate, was he one of the Ma'apilim who in this week's Parshin Shlach went on, if you like, a suicide mission to try and invade Eretz Israel against God's wishes and against Moshe's wishes? Was he one of them? Was he the Mekoshesh Eitzim, the mysterious man who was gathering twigs, breaking Shabbos? Exactly why he was doing that, a whole Torah on that, but he died of his own sin. Ubanim lo hayu lo, but he had no sons. Lama yigara shem avinu mitoch mishpachto? Why should our father's name be blotted out? This is an important point. Hakamat Hashem, the name of the family will be lost because they're all girls. They will all lose their inheritance because it goes to the male members of the tribe. Ki ein lo ben, just because he has no son, why should our father's name be blotted out? Give us a portion together with our uncles. Meaning we want to inherit our father's portion. Okay? Moshe didn't know how to answer them. He took the question to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and God answers, yes, they are saying the correct thing. Cain and Zion here. Cain benot slavcha dovrot. They are speaking correctly. Natam titen lahem achuzat nachala. You have to give them an inheritance. And from here, the Torah laws of inheritance appear. These three verses that we're going to read now, four verses, which are going to give us the broad outline as to how the rest of the shiur will work. Just one second. Okay, fine. Yeah. Chet. Ve'el b'nei Yisrael tedaber le'mor. So now speak to the Jewish people. Okay, I'm just trying to mute everybody again. I'm not sure how to do that while I'm screen sharing. Just one second. I'm always picking up new skills. Oh, it seems to have corrected itself. That's fine. I'll learn how to do that. Ve'el b'nei Yisrael tedaber le'mor. Pasuk chet. Everyone with me? Please speak to the Jewish people, says God to Moshe. Ish ki yamut. If a person dies, if a man dies specifically, Uben Einlo, and he has no sons. Va'avartem et nachlato lebita. You will pass his inheritance to his daughters. Yes, they're correct. Daughters will inherit if there are no sons. The im Einlo bat, if he has no daughter and no sons, unatatin et nachlato le'echav. He will give his wealth to his brothers. Okay? The im Einlo achim, if he has no brothers, unatatin et nachlato le'achei aviv. He will pass that on to his uncles. The im ein achim la'aviv, and he has no uncles, and atatim et nachlato l'sheiro hakrav elav. He will pass it on to the nearest male relative. Okay, we'll see how that works in a minute. The mishpachto, the yareshota, and he will inherit that. The haitel ibnei Yisrael, and then we have two words. This will be for the Jewish people l'chukat mishpat. It will be a law, a mishpat, but we will be a chukat mishpat. It will be a law, the Rambam will say in a minute, we'll see, it will be a law that will not change. It will be a law that is permanent, that you can't get around. It will be a law that you can't evade. There will be no evasion or avoidance of this halachic issue. And we'll see, this is going to make it very difficult for us to write a will and give the money to people who are not strictly part of the Torah laws of succession. So how does this work? So the Torah really, Torah makes it very clear. Who inherits? The answer is number one, the sons, equally. We'll see in a minute a nuance to that. If there are no sons, the daughters. But if there are sons, the daughters get nothing. The sons get everything. If there are no sons or daughters, the brothers inherit. If there are no brothers, the father's brothers inherit. And in the absence of any of those, then it goes to the nearest male relative. Now, you can see already where we're coming from here. Meaning, a daughter, together with a son, inherits nothing. And many would regard that as inequitable. And we'll see how that works in a minute. Is there any way we can give our money and our assets equally to our sons and daughters, which I suspect that most people sitting and listening to this Zoom would actually like to do if they possibly could. So let's have a look. First of all, let me digress for a second on an irresistible midrash. It's not strictly speaking related to the issue of inheritance, but I couldn't resist bringing it to you because it's one of my favorite midrashim. Look at the Sifrei in Bamidbar, in number 2. The Tikravna Benot Slavchad. What was their, why did they complain? Why didn't they just accept? God says to Moshe, the men and the men only will inherit. So they say, okay, so if God says that, that's what God says. You know, we're not here to question God's word. No, they questioned it. Kevan Shishamu Benot Slavchad Sheharet Mitchaleket L'Shvatim L'Zacharim V'Lol N'Kevot. Once they heard that the land, the Eretz Yisrael, was going to the men and not the women, Nitkatsu kulam zo el zo. They got together in a huddle, little eta, and they said, we've got to do something about this. Why? Amru, they said, lo karachme basar adam rachme hamakom. God doesn't work like human beings. Basar vadam, a regular human being, rachamav ala zacharim yoter min hanekevot. Look what it says. A regular human being is sexist. Human legal systems favor men more than they favor women. They discriminate against women. That's what we expect. But Aslavchad knew what they were, knew where they were in life. They know that men get more than women in this world. About Misha, Am of Ahaya, Oilam, Ainu came, but God doesn't work like that. God is not sexist. God is not discriminatory. Given since the Torah is coming from Hashem, there's something wrong with the message that we're receiving that the men inherit and the women can't get anything. Fascinating medrash. El Racham of Allah Zachar and Alan Kevot. God cares for the women no less than for the men. Racham of Allah Kol. God cares for everything. God has mercy on everything. Isn't that a fascinating midrash? This idea that they came to Moshe Rabbeinu with the assumption that the Torah would never be sexist. Now, you can argue whether you feel the Torah is equal or fair in other areas, etc. And that's an important discussion to have. But this midrash at least shows you where Chazal are coming from in their idea as to what the Torah, the starting point, the underlying message of the Torah is meant to present. Okay, I'll leave you to think about that and talk to your friends and family about it. Fine. So the sons inherit, the daughters don't. Did the sons inherit equally? Apparently so, except that in Dvarim we see a pasuk about the Bechor, Vahaya number 3, Vahaya b'yomah hanchilo et banav, when a man gives to his children to inherit, et asher yielo, all the wealth that he might have acquired, lo yuchal lebaker et ben ha'uva al bnei ben ha'snua ha'bechor. If a man has two wives, and one of them is loved and one of them is rejected, snua doesn't really mean hated, it means rejected, and obviously this is This is presenting the Rachel-Leah situation, and you have a tense and somewhat dysfunctional arrangement in this man's life where he has a wife that he prefers and a wife that he rejects and children from both. He may not favor the child of the favored wife. Ki esa b'chor ben asnua yakir, if his firstborn is from the less favored wife, latet lo pishnayim, he has to give him the double portion, b'chol asher yimatzelo, of everything that he owns, ki hu reishit ono, he is his firstborn child, his first strength, lo mishvat ha-b'chora. He gets the firstborn rule. Now, what I think very interesting is if you look at both of these sources for the law of inheritance, they're both coming from somewhat tense family arrangements, which I think says something. The Benot Slochad is a tense arrangement. They feel rejected, they feel overlooked, they feel they're being treated in a discriminatory way, and that's not right under the Torah. The son of the less favored wife is feeling rejected because his mother is rejected. The Torah is coming in to overlay the law of inheritance on the top of that. So I think that already identifies from the very roots of the sources that inheritance is a tense issue, and often families do not work in the way that they're meant to do on these questions. Okay, so the Torah seems very clear. Who inherits all your money? Your sons. The first son, double portion. The rest of the sons equally, and the daughters get klum. The daughters get nothing. If there are no sons, okay, then we can talk about the daughters, but otherwise, the daughters get nothing. Okay, so let's say you want to change that. Rambam says you can't. Look in number 4. Ein adam yachal ha-hayrish l'misha ein roi l'yorsha. A person can't circumvent these rules. You can't give your money to anyone else. V'lo la'akor ha-yirusha min ha-yorish. You can't take it away from the Torah inheritors. Afal pisha zemamonhu, even though it's your money. Normally speaking, you can do what you like with your money. You can spend your money during your lifetime, you can give it away, you can leave it to the local yeshiva, you can give it all to the OU Israel Center to endow their programming for the future. You can do whatever you want with your money, it's your money. But you can't give it after death to people other than the Torah say should receive it, and we'll see why that is. The minute a person passes away, Ad Me'ev Esrim, they don't own their money anymore. They don't have the power. In secular law, a person gives away their inheritance a moment after death. In halacha, a moment after death, a person doesn't own anything. It's already passed to the Yorshim. The Fishinem of a Parsha Nachlatzah, back to number 4, it already says in the Torah, V'haita l'vnei Yisrael, chukat mishpat, a permanent law. Loma, this is telling us, as the Rambam, shechukat zo. It is a fixture. Lo tishtane, it cannot change. Ein hatanai moela, you can't make your own monetary conditions to make it different. Bein shitzivahu varimin, whether you did this when you were well. Bein shihayishchid mira, even if a person is, God forbid, on their deathbed, and they say, I declare this is my last will and testament, the money has to go here, here, and here. Is this gornisht helfen, as they say, won't work. Bein alper, bein bichsav, whether it's oral, whether it's written, whether you have a notary, whether you sign it and seal it, eino moil. You can't get clearer than that. Says the Rambam, it just doesn't work. The money has to go to the people that the Torah says it has to go to. Now, we'll see that Jews are very ingenious, and there are ways that you can actually make it work, in spite of the fact that the Rambam told you repeatedly you can't. But that's for next week. But first of all, you have to see that the Torah is very insistent in doing that. We'll have a piece of Rav Kook, Be'ezrat Hashem, a little bit after. By the way, this is not only the Torah. In many jurisdictions, the secular law determines where you leave your money. We're used to coming from an American or an English system where you can do what you like with your money in your will. In France, for example, you can't. In France, if you have children, the French law will determine that money will go to your children. For example, if you have 3 children under French law, 75% of your assets have to go to the children. It doesn't matter if you write a will. So halacha is not alone in this sense in having a very regulatory approach to where you leave your money. Now, why is this? It's obvious in the ancient sense that the ancient world worked in a very patriarchal manner, that the tribes were based on the male members. As we know, we get our tribal affiliation from our fathers, not from our mothers. You're a Kohen or a Levi or a Yisrael based on your father. And therefore, in a patriarchal society where the wife almost always marries into the husband's family, she leaves her father's home and goes into her husband's home. Clearly, if the women inherited, that inheritance would then be lost from the family. because it would go to the husband, and the husband's family would then take it over. And that's why this idea of Hakamat Hashem, that the name of the father's line has to continue, and that can only continue through the sons, that was so stressed in this way. There's a little bit of a residue of this today, this kind of patriarchal, and I don't say patriarchal with the kind of baggage that's often associated with it, but what do you do about taking a family name when you get married? How does that work, even in today's society? You take your husband's name, or you keep your own name if you're a woman getting married. You take a double barrel name, and how far does that go? There's a new thing in Israel, especially, that young couples are coming up with a completely new name. They're rejecting the husband's family name and the wife's family name, and they're taking in, are any of these solutions really satisfactory? Possibly not, because they all bring with them other problems, but this patriarchal background is very much, very much there. And you see this, by the way, clearly with the Avot, that Abraham is insistent that Yitzchak may not go to the place that his wife is living. She must come to him. The wife comes into the husband's family. You see this also with the laws of Truma. Those people who left, like Lot, they assimilated. Yehuda also, when he goes down at the beginning before he does tshuva. So clearly the halacha makes a lot of sense within the classic ancient system. The question is that how society works today, and what can we do about that? Built in, however, and I just want to leave this as a petach before we get into what Chazal did, built into this whole system is the reality that the laws of inheritance did shift quite quickly in quite a short amount of time. Let me tell you what I'm talking about. Even within Tanakh, think about the following. Originally, the law of inheritance was given by Moshe, only the men may inherit. That's stage one. Then stage two, the Benot Tzlofchad came along and said, well, we don't think that's fair. We think that the women should also inherit. Okay, so there was a change. Hashem said, yes, correct, the women will inherit if there are no sons. Then, remember what happens at the end of the book of Bamidbar? The men from the tribe of Manasseh come in and say, well, this is not fair, because if the women are inheriting, we'll lose the land to another tribe. So then there's a new rule. Remember, right at the end of Bamidbar, which is that if a woman gets married, she has to marry someone from her tribe. And then, in the book of Judges, there's another change, which is the whole Tuba Av Torah, where women were finally allowed to marry into different tribes. Again, you see here that the law of inheritance doesn't just arrive, it arrives and then is slightly changed, and then again slightly changed, and then again slightly changed, maybe giving some kind of indication that this is something which does, even though it's chukat mishpat, it does maybe have to move a little bit with different societies. I'm just giving that as a bit of a potential background. Okay, fine. Let's move on. So what do we have so far? We have very clearly a Torah system that lays down undisputed, absolutely crystal clear laws of inheritance, which it repeatedly says that there's nothing you can do to change. Chazal came along already in a society which was far less patriarchal, and instituted a number of important things to try and make sure that women have an inheritance of some kind. And I want to show you here three things which Chazal tried to innovate here, and did innovate, that make a difference to inheritance. And again, when you see these, you'll understand how this will give us some precedence as to what to do today. Fine. Point number one. In halacha, if there is a debt on the estate before the person dies, that debt will burden the estate. I apologize, by the way, in advance. When I teach a topic like this, I start to revert into my legal speak. And I go back 20 years and start talking about, you know, things in a very legalistic way. If you like that, then great. If you don't like that, then my apologies. But basically, the estate is subject to a lien of any prior creditors. What does that mean? That means if the father has, even if he tries to give his money away during his life, and by the way, I think we skipped, no, we'll get to that source soon. Even if he tries to give his money away during his life, it works. But if he makes a debt on the estate, let's say to the wife or to the daughters, that will bind the inheritors. Let me show you what I mean. Chazal did three main things to make sure that women are provided for, even though they don't get inheritance. Number one is maintenance. Look at number six with me. The Mishnah in Ksubah says as follows: V'zeh midrash darish Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah lifnei chachamim b'kerem b'yavna. A very ancient law. This law was already established back in the time of Kerem B'Yavna, and possibly earlier. Habanim Yorshu, the banim, the sons inherit, the habanot yizonu, and the daughters have to be maintained. They get maintenance. What does that mean? It means that when the assets are left to the sons have an obligation to give the unmarried daughters maintenance to keep them in the state to which they are accustomed, okay, which could be quite a lot of money. And that is a prior claim on the estate. The daughters come first. Look in number 7, the Mishnah goes on to say, later in Ksubas, Admon Omer, this is a fascinating Mishnah, Admon, who is one of the Tanaim, says Shiva, seven things. One of them is as follows. Misha makes, if somebody dies, v'hiniach bonim, a bonis, and they leave sons and daughters, bizman she'nachasim merubim, if there are plenty of assets, great. Habonim yorshim, the sons inherit, v'habonis nizonis, and the daughters get maintenance. Good. The sons have to make sure that they are maintained. They get a regular money. Ubenachasim muatim, but if there are very few assets, who gets them? The boys or the girls? He says, habanim yazunu. The girls have a priority on the maintenance. The habanim yachzur ala psachim, and the boys have to go begging. Who gets first dibs on the money if there is very little? The girls. The girls get maintenance. They don't get assets, but they get maintenance. So, Admon Omer, look at this. Positive discrimination. This is, or whatever, positive, affirmative action. It depends on how you say it. Admon says, Bishvil she'ani zochar hifsadati. Just because I'm a man, I should lose out? What is this? The Torah is meant to be fair, and it's not fair to men. The sisters are getting priority over the brothers. Amar Rabban Gamliel. Rabban Gamliel says, good point. Raya ani es divrei Admon. I think you're right. It's not fair that the daughters get priority over the sons. However, too bad. Says the Barat Hanura, ein halacha ka Admon. The halacha doesn't follow Admon. The daughters do get priority, even though that is, on a certain level, discriminatory in favor of the girls. Again, if there are fewest assets in the estate, so the boys have to go begging, and the girls get whatever there is in terms of maintenance. That's number one, financial maintenance. Number two, the girls get a dowry, a nedunya. Anyone who's listening in when they read the ksuba at a wedding will hear this word nedunya coming out. Look how the Rambam describes this. Number 8. Hanachasim shemachneset ha'isha labala. If the woman brings in funds into the marriage, bein karka, whether it's land, bein batalfilim, whether it's movable property, bein avadim, or slaves, or servants, afal pisha hei nichtavim b'shtar ksuba, even though they may be written into the ksuba, einu nikram ksuba, they're not really called the ksuba, ela nedunya. That's the dowry. That's what the father gives the daughter to bring into her marriage. In kibala balach rayot hanedunya, if the husband takes responsibility for those assets, okay, on himself, anasid b'shusha, he keeps them. In patcha patcha lo, if they go down in value, then epachata patcha lo, if they go down, then he takes the loss. Him hosiru hosiru lo, if they go up, he takes the loss and takes the gain. Harizon nikred nikse tzombarasov. I'm not getting into all the details. They're called a certain kind of asset, nikse tzombarasov. Zim loy kibalach reis, but if the husband says to the wife, no, these are your assets, you keep them. You take responsibility, okay? El hari hibru shut ha'isha, and they stay in the woman's Rishut, in pachata pachta la, if there's any loss, she carries the loss. In oisiru oisiru la, harize nikred nikse malug. These are nikse malug, and this is a way of keeping assets in the woman's control, so that when the husband dies, he doesn't inherit those, that when the wife dies, he doesn't inherit the assets, they belong to her. So again, the dowry was the nedunya was a system whereby a father could give money to his daughter, which would stay with the daughter, and even though she married into another family, that money would not get subsumed into the husband's family money. It would stay discreet, nichsei malug. As long as she keeps responsibility, then she keeps hold of the assets. That's another thing they brought in. A third thing, which I'm not going to go into in great detail, is something called ktubat banim dichrin. Basically, it works like this. If a man had a son with a first wife, and that first wife died, and then the husband remarries and has further children, further sons through his second wife, there is a special tanai, there's a special condition written into the ktubah, here in source number 9, whether he writes it or whether he doesn't write it, that the first wife's money will be inherited by her son. It won't be diluted between all the other sons. Again, let me make sure that you're clear on what the situation is here. A man marries and has a son through wife number one, and then she dies, leaving that son or sons, and then he remarries and has more sons through wife number two. Now, in theory, his assets will be divided between all of his sons. Say Chazal, no. He is able to provide, and that the halacha will provide, that the assets that belong to his first wife only go to the sons of that wife. They don't get diluted with the other sons. Why? Look at the Gemara. Very important Gemara number 10. Amar Rabbi Yochanan Mishum Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai. Mipnei mahit kin iksuvot benim dichren. Why did the rabbis institute this idea that the assets would stay with the sons of the first wife? They wouldn't get diluted. Kedei sheyikvot Adam, because a person should take the initiative. Vayichtav lebitoy kebanoy. These are important lines because they give us the basis for the current day halacha. That a person should always try, says the halacha, and make sure his daughters are not disinherited. There should be a mechanism that you can use to try and get the daughters to inherit. To, in some way, even if we can't override the halacha in the Torah, the rabbis instituted this particular financial situation so that the wife's family would not lose control of that money. It would go to her children rather than to other sons as well. Interesting. So on the one hand, Chazal are insistent on maintaining the Torah priority order. The sons inherit, not the daughters. But they instituted financial support. Nadunya, the dowry, the ketubat banin dichrin, all these different ways to try and make sure that the wife's children and the wife herself could keep control in some way of some of the assets. Interestingly, on the other side of the coin, and here we're going to see some sources which you may not be familiar with, which are fascinating, Chazal were very worried by people who pressured the egalitarian inheritance with the daughters. Even though they made these arrangements to try and work around the halacha, they considered equal inheritance as being very against the halacha. In the ancient Roman and Greek world, boys and girls inherited equally. Look at these sources, 12, 13, 14. Had Sadukim Omrim, the Sadducees, a divergent group at the time of the second temple, they say, Bat Haben Vahabat Shnehem Shavim. Surely granddaughters and daughters have to be the same. What's with granddaughters? So don't forget, if a person leaves two sons, and one of those sons, or a person has two sons, and one of those sons predeceases them, but he himself has a daughter, so who will inherit? So the remaining son and the granddaughter. Meaning the granddaughter will take from her father, from her deceased father's estate. So said the Sadukim, that's ridiculous. If the granddaughter already inherits, why can't you get the daughter to inherit? Why don't you change the halacha so the daughter inherits? Chazal said, no way, Jose. We are not doing that. Your logic doesn't work. Your kal v'chomer doesn't work. It doesn't work that way at all. They rejected that idea completely. So too in the Yerushalmi here, number 13. Chachmei ha'akum, the non-Jewish wise men, the legal brains of the non-Jewish world say, Ben ubat shavim ka'achat. The son and the daughter should be equal in their inheritance. And then they bring the proofs that the non-Jews bring and the rejection of those proofs. So Chazal felt under siege a little bit by the non-Jewish world, by the Sadducees, and then by the Christian world that insisted that daughters and sons had to inherit equally. Look at this source number 14, and here I brought you the uncensored version of the Gemara. That's quite hard to come by if you don't know where to look, meaning if you pick up a standard Shas off the shelf, then you'll get the censored version. If you know where to look, you'll find the uncensored version with all the naughty bits still in it. Who took them out? The church. The church took out parts of the Talmud because they considered it to be anti-Christian. But here is the original version. It's actually quite a comical Gemara. It's quite humorous and it's very instructive. Look at number 14, a Gemara in Shabbos. If you're in Daf Yomi, this is coming up in about a month from now. A bit less. Number 14. Eima Shalom Debitsu the Rabbi Loza. Achate the Rabban Gamliel Havir. This lady, Eima Shalom, was the sister of Rabban Gamliel and the wife of Rabbi Eliezer. Okay? She was the sister of Rabban Gamliel. Hava ahu philosopha b'shivavuse. There was a philosopher, a Christian philosopher, an early Christian. When did Rabban Gamliel live? around about the 2nd century, the time of the early Christians. This is the younger Rabban Gamliel, not the older Rabban Gamliel. The older Rabban Gamliel, Zakein, features heavily in the New Testament as himself a figure, but that's not him, it's the younger one, his grandson. So there was a Christian philosopher in the district, Zahava Shakil Shma. He used to pride himself, Zaloy Makabel Shukhta, he never took a bribe. Bola Chuchibe, so they set out to show him up. This is what they did, look carefully. So she gave him a gift. She gave this Christian philosopher a golden lamp. The other came, and she came up to him. The Amrin, and she said to him, I want to inherit equally with my brother, Rabban Gamliel. Can I? So Amalahu, he said, Pardon. Divide it equally. Amalei ksivlan. But then Rabban Gamliel said to him, excuse me, doesn't it say in our Torah, the Makam Bra Bartalai Tiras, when there are sons, the daughters may not inherit. How could you tell my sister she can inherit? Amalei, so he says to Rabban Gamliel, listen, you Jews, you've lost it. Min yuma de gilusan me'arka, from the time you were exiled from your land, it nasit oraita, your Torah has been taken away, the Moshe. Moshe's Torah has been removed. Viz havi avon gilion. What's the avon gilion? The Evangelion is the Evangelion, which is the Greek name for the New Testament, for the Gospels. Now, Chazal called it the Evangelion, the manuscript or the parchment which is of evil, if you like. So that's its nickname. So he says, so this priest comes along and says, your Torah is defunct, God has rejected you, God has now given the New Testament, and girls and boys inherit equally. It says in the New Testament, Bra ubarta kachad and yartan. Boys and sons and daughters will inherit equally. By the way, does it say that in the New Testament? I don't know how many of you are New Testament scholars here. The answer is, it does not say that anywhere in the New Testament, but it does say that in the Roman law. Okay? So this philosopher was quoting from Roman law. Fine. Boys and girls get equally. Lemachar, so the next day, Rabban Gamliel came back, he brought him a beautiful Libyan donkey as a counter bribe. Amalahu, and then he said to this philosopher, Shaftis Lesefa. You know, he said to the philosopher, what can I do? So the philosopher says to him, ooh, I've looked to the end of the gospel, the Evangelion, and it says there, Analoila Mifchat Min Oraisa de Moshe Asisi. He's quoting Jesus. It's amazing. Where does it quote Jesus in the Gemara? Here. I have not come to change the law of Moses, okay? Loila Sifi Alaraita, I've not come to add to the Torah of Moshe or to take away from the Torah of Moshe. By the way, that is a quote from the New Testament. That's in Matthew 5:17, okay? Says the Gemara, this philosopher changed his tune. All of a sudden it says, Jesus didn't come to take away from the law. Ksiv Bein, it says in your law, B'mokam Bra Barata Loitiris. So only sons inherit, not daughters. So he got a bigger bribe. He went with Rabban Gamliel. Amra Lei, so she said to him, Nahor Nirich Kishraga, but what about the lamp? So the Rabban Gamliel said the donkey has come and kicked over the lamp. Okay? Meaning, what I think is fascinating here is that Chazal saw this very much as part of the battle with Christianity. And we'll see in a minute, Rav Kook picks up on this and says that those people who want to try and equalize the halacha at this point, and want to try and institute the law that everybody can, that both sons and daughters inherit equally, this is a Christian thing which we will reject and reject very clearly. Fine. So, let's move in. What happened in the after the Gemara? So where do things stand? So clearly writing a will doesn't work, apparently, because your assets are not your own to give away. The Torah clearly says that a person their assets will vest only in the Torah heirs, who are the sons, not the daughters, etc., as we've said. Now, in the medieval period, a number of things were instituted to try and help with this. And I want to introduce you to them, because one of them becomes very important in terms of the modern halacha. First of all, the rabbis were constantly under pressure on this. Look here in number 17, in the Radvaz. The Radvaz is living in Egypt in the 1600s. 16th century, excuse me, he says the following, Chachmei Hagoyim, the wise Islamic scholars, he's living in an Islamic world, Toysim Aleinu, they attack us. Eich Esha Shaloya Risha Atayra Klum Labak, how could the Torah not leave anything to daughters? How could the Torah disinherit daughters? It's not fair. This is, you can see here, this is a charge which has been made against us from the very beginning, up until modern times. What did he answer them? You'll see if you like this answer. The Ani Ragula Hashiv Lahem, what I normally say to these Muslim scholars, Islamic scholars, is Shahatara Yarda Lasaif Das Yisrael Harachamin. The Torah knows that the brothers will be kind. Ki Acheha Yifarnasata, the brothers will give her maintenance, Visu Lifnefoda. And they will marry her off according to the manner in which she should be married off. Meaning the Radvaz basically said, listen, the Torah is given to tzaddikim, and the brothers are tzaddikim, and they will make sure that the girls have everything they may need. Okay, that's nice, but the problem is the Torah is not always given to tzaddikim, and not everybody does exactly what the Torah expects them to do. So the Radvaz's answer is nice, and it's beautiful, and in many cases it's correct, but not every family works in the ideal way that that the Radvaz suggested. The institutions of Chazal, already by the Middle Ages, were falling away. The Ramah in number 18 says, I never saw anyone have a Ketubat Banim Dichrin anymore. This idea where the first wife's children inherit her property, we don't do that anymore. What do they do? And here is where it gets, I think, really interesting. Number 19, says the Ramah, living in Krakow, already in the 16th century, he says the following. This is what we do to help the girls. Shtar chetzi zachar. We have such a thing as a shtar chetzi zachar. What is a shtar chetzi zachar? Literally means a document of half of the sons, of half of the males. We'll see in a minute what that is. Shenoigim bo heiden. This is what we do today. Shekotev ha'av lebitar. The father can write for his daughter. Litol b'yirushasa, that she will take from his estate. Kechelek Chatzi Hazachar, a share which is half that of the brothers. How can he do that? How does he do that? The Torah says you can't do that. If he gives his money away during his life, okay, that he can do. Even though that's not necessarily advisable, and we'll talk more about that next week. But how can he leave a half share to the daughters? So the answer is, this is how it basically worked. The mechanism of this Shtar Chatzi Zachar is as follows. And by the way, Gluckel of Hamelin, anyone who has ever read the memoirs of Gluckel of Hamelin, this is one of the most interesting documents to come down to us from the 1700s rather. Gluckel of Hamelin writes that her father actually left one of these for her and for her sister to make sure that they inherited. How does that work? This is how it works. The father writes a debt to the daughters while he's still alive. And he says basically, my estate when I die will owe my daughters $10 million. There is a massive debt to the daughters, which effectively wipes out the estate. But if you, my sons, make sure that you give your sisters a share of the estate, which is at least a half of the share that you take, then that debt will not be effective. So effectively, the sons have a choice. Either they take the debt, which wipes out the whole estate, or they make sure the daughter gets assets. Interestingly, even though that effectively circumvents the halacha in many ways, it makes sure the daughters actually inherit, that was acceptable. That was considered to be an acceptable way to proceed. And by the way, it doesn't mean that the daughters have to get a half. The daughters could get a full share. The father could do whatever he likes. He could say in this shtar, I want my daughters to inherit equally with my sons, and this loan which is in place, the daughters effectively are creditors, that will make sure that that happens. And that became a very standard practice in Ashkenaz, for sure, maybe and even earlier in Sephardi lands or somewhere, but certainly in Ashkenaz in the 17th century and after that. As I said, Gluckel of Hamelin says that this was something that she actually had herself to make sure that she inherited properly. Okay, let's get into the modern era and look at Rav Kook. What are we going to do today? There's no question that the Shulchan Aruch says that the best people to inherit are the people that the Torah says. There's also no question that already through the ages, the rabbis in the time of Chazal, the Ashkenazi poskim in the time of the Ramah, were trying to develop legal means to make sure that the daughters would not be left without assets. What's going to be in the 20th century? So already by the 20th century, most people feel that the sons inheriting to the exclusion of the daughters is not fair. And Rav Kook was himself challenged on this and told, like, how can it be, how can you justify a halachic system which allows the sons to inherit but not the daughters? Even if you have all sorts of mechanisms to try and get around that, how can you justify that? And Rav Kook writes a very, very strong piece. It's very interesting. Rav Kook was in so many ways ahead of his time, but on women's issues, he wasn't what we would call today ahead of his time. He was very traditional on many women's issues, okay? And he actually presents in number 21, in one of his letters, written an early letter in 1908, he was challenged. And how do we respond to people when they say that the law is discriminatory, that the halacha is? And he says, basically, the halacha is like the rules of nature. I'm not going to read the whole source inside. It's like the rules of nature. How so? The rules of nature are perfect, perfectly calibrated. If every now and then individuals, the sun shines every day. Every now and then there are people who get sunstroke. That doesn't mean we should stop the sun shining. The system is set up in a way that is intrinsically perfect. And there will be individuals who do not get the best deal. That's only to be expected. So too with the laws of the Torah. And he writes a very strongly worded tshuva here, a letter here where he talks about the need to insist on the Torah inheritance, not to change it. And if you look just at the end here, looking number four, I've sort of put sub-paragraphs in. Look, start with number three. Al tigu Adonai ariga karim. Please do not, my lords, he's writing to the people who are talking to him, the Kedushat HaMishpat, don't interfere with the laws of the Torah. Ki HaMishpat Elokim, judgment is for God, and these laws come in the Torah. Chalil Alanu Liv'od Bishvil Zeh B'Mishpat Shalanu. God forbid we should mess around with the law, change the law. Shizeu Adav Ayyasi Chashuv Mikol Ruchushetainu Aruchani. This is our greatest spiritual inheritance. HaNeshama Shal Kol HaUmah. This is the spirit, this is the soul of the nation. Even more so of our nation. Go to number four. The Yadik Father, you know full well, She'ein lanu shel dinei mamonashiyye kol kach moitzei et atzmoi mechubal mishpat kasub kamo mishpat ha-yurusha. The most clear of all monetary laws is the law of inheritance. You couldn't get clearer, says Rav Kook, in the Torah. Nothing could be more crystal clear. She'afilu ba'oitzer ha-mamonachot, even in other countries, Asher viru et ha-mishpatim ve'etikum imkam, who have got rid of many of their traditional laws, hinichu b'yoseh esmachum kvodam b'toras ha-yurusha, they kept inheritance law the way it always used to be. Man of the bear, man is dark, how can we justify changing it? And he talks and talks about this, and he says right at the end, I just want to show you here, v'yada adoni, you know full well, ki ha-makom asher o'yvaisenu ha-natruk, our enemy, Christianity. And by the way, the Rav Kook felt that Christianity was a much bigger challenge to Judaism and Israel than Islam. And the students of Rav Kook feel this way. If you've ever spoken to Rav Aviner about what is a... I once heard a firebrand sermon from Rav Shlomo Aviner in Bet El, where he stood up on Friday night and said, we don't have a problem with Islam. By the way, this is in Bet El, where just, you know, like 100 yards away, they in Ramallah, they're kind of firing, you know, on the Yishuv. He says, we don't have an issue with Islam. We'll sort it out. Our issue is with Christianity. He's coming from Rav Kook. And the Christians say here, three lines up from the bottom, Habat, the Christianity is Habat and Oshechet Shadayimah. The daughter that bites the breast of its mother, meaning it's trying to get back at us. We gave it birth. We gave birth to Christianity, and Christianity, Rasta, Begegel, Harachamim, in the name of mercy, Shehinotabi Adayim Mele'ot Damnaki, the mercy that Christianity has, which comes to us with hands full of innocent blood. Rav Kook was not a fan of this. La'aliv et ha-yadud, he comes to accuse us. Hu zeh anose shel hakarat yushat habat. The classic issue on which we get challenged by Christianity is equal inheritance for girls. Neged mishpat Torahena, against our Torah HaKadosha. So Rav Kook was very, very clear on this. How did this play out? So when the British Mandate started, this was before the Mandate, when the British Mandate started, British insisted that the rabbinical courts applied English law. I say English law, by the way, not British law, because there's no such thing as British law. English law and Scottish law are quite different, in case anybody's interested in looking into that more. But the British applied English law, and men and women had to inherit equally. Was that a good thing or a bad thing? Well, Rav Kook felt that that was a bad thing. Others very strongly disagreed. Have a look at the Gesher HaChaim, number 22, coming towards the end. The Gesher HaChaim, Rav Tukhachinsky, one of the leaders of the Yeshuv in the 1930s and 40s, gives us a salutary tale. Look at what he says, number 22. Talmid Chacham Asher Echad. I want to tell you a story of a rich Talmid Chacham. Okay? Asamase. This is what he did. Himchil b'tzava, he left in his will, et kol ruchusha rak al pi haTorah. He insisted on giving his children their inheritance exactly according to the Torah. The b'chor k'b'chorata. He gave the firstborn son double. Okay? V'shnei banav v'pshutim k'pshutam. And the next two sons, a single portion. U'l'shloshet b'noitav lo klum. And he gave his daughters zero. Because he said, I'm frum, the Torah tells me what to do, this is what I'm doing. Double to the firstborn, the rest to the sons, zero to the daughters. What did he actually give his family, says the Rav Tukhachinsky? The Hinchil Sina, all he did is give his family hatred, tacharut, competition, pirut, division, the Mishpachta and his family. All they did for the rest of their lives was fight and not speak to each other. Adasha Amru Habriyas, until people said about that case, Shaloi Kedai Hul Hashir Ruchosh, it's better not to have money at all, the lahayrish sinner, than to leave for your family only machlokas, only hatred and division. So you see already by this century, many of the leaders of the Jewish people felt it actually, even though the Torah clearly says this, it doesn't work. It'll be disastrous. What will happen? The family will end up in massive amounts of dispute. It's possible that the daughters will challenge the will in the secular courts. They may even win. And then the family will end up taking each other to court. That itself is a Torah prohibition, potentially, where two Jews go to a secular court in order to fight it out between them. Then the court will award estate to the daughters, which they're not really entitled to in halacha, and then they will be guilty of the Torah prohibition of gezel. They will be stealing from their brothers. Say the Meforshim now in the postgame of the 20th century, this is a disaster waiting to happen on every level. What a person needs to do is they need to find a way, halachically, to leave the money to the daughters as well. Even though that seems to circumvent the Torah in some way, it's absolutely critical. Let me tell you the last part of the story for today anyway, which is Rav Herzog. And here I picked this up from a very interesting shir by Rav Shimoni, who is one of the Ramin in the Gush. Here's what happened when Rav Herzog got into power. Rav Herzog was the chief rabbi after Rav Kook. Even though Rav Kook took a very strong line that Christian compassion in equal treatment of the daughters was misplaced, Rav Herzog did not agree. He took the line which was much more like we saw now from Rav Tukhachinsky. It's going to be disastrous for your family if your daughters do not inherit. And he was very keen to try and create some kind of equality within the Israeli legal system for boys and girls, which also worked within halacha. And the following basically happened. When the state was established in the late 1940s, Chief Rabbi Herzog and Chief Rabbi Uziel went to meet with Ben-Gurion. This is recorded in the memoirs of the president of the Bagatz. The Bagatz has always been an interesting presence in Israel, and this week no less than others. But the president of the Bagatz, Judge Yitzhak Olshan, he records this in his memoirs. Listen to what happened. They all sat in a meeting in Ben-Gurion's office. And Rav Herzog said to Ben-Gurion, I would like you to try and give more authority to halacha within the English, within the Israeli legal system. Ben-Gurion responded, I'm happy to do that, but I'm upset by certain halachic principles, like daughters not being able to inherit. If you can change that, then I will give the Rabbanut more authority in Israeli law. Rav Herzog said, challenge accepted, I'll get that changed, and I'll do it quickly. Ben-Gurion says, well, you better do it quickly, because we need to resolve this, and this really upsets me. When Rav Herzog left, Olshan turned around to Ben-Gurion and said, how on earth could you just give so much ground to the religious community? You've just given the Rabbanut the opportunity to insert themselves into Israeli law. So Ben-Gurion smiled at him and said, don't worry, he'll never be able to get changes past the other Haredi rabbis, past the Chazon Ish, past Rav Isser Zalman Meltzer. Have no fears, it will all be fine. And Ben-Gurion was right. Rav Herzog did not succeed in persuading any of the other leading rabbis of the Yeshuv to make halachic innovations to allow daughters to inherit. He did not even succeed in persuading the Knesset to pass a law which in any way incorporated halakha into Israeli law. And by the way, that's the case. Even though marriage and divorce in Israeli law is very much subject to halakha, inheritance is not at all. Nevertheless, and I'll leave you to read this on your own, the last source on the sheet I brought from Rav Shlomo Dykovsky, Rav Dykovsky, who was one of the senior rabbonim, said, despite all of that, I've never yet been involved in a case where they somehow didn't find a way to make sure the wife inherits, the daughters inherit, and the family has shalom. You can do it. If you know how to do it, you can do it. And that's what I need to look at next time, which is going to be much more focused on what are the actual mechanisms that are used to try and make sure that a halakhic will works. And also what I want to look at next time a little bit is what exactly is the problem if Jews go to a secular court? You know, we've all been told this. Two Jews must go to Beis Din. They may not go to a secular court. Why is that? What is the problem? How do we deal with that? Which is a very practical issue for many people. If you've ever been involved in legal disputes with another Jew, that's not a happy situation generally, and being in a secular court is very tricky. So more about that next week. But for now, let's leave it there. Again, I want to reiterate that the shiur has been sponsored anonymously, but very gratefully received as an aliyah for the neshama of Bobby Hill, and we certainly all remember him and benefit from his Torah ad yom hazeh. I leave you with those thoughts. Think again about the video we showed at the beginning, and if there's any way that you can donate in this very special week of fundraising for the OU Israel Center, then really I would encourage you to do so. So keep well, stay well. We hopefully will see you next week in Yitz Hashem, and you can think about inheritance between now and then. Okay? If you have any questions, please be in touch. I really appreciate seeing everybody, and we'll talk more next week.
Thank you very much from Natalia.
Ah, thank you very much, and to Natalia.
Thank you.
All the best.
Thank
all the best. Have a wonderful day. Thank you. Okay, all the best.